The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today.
Showtime. The right way to start your day. This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Isn't that weird? A pizza place, right?
Okay, well, now it's less weird, just so you know.
I think most people love a salad with their pizza.
Ready?
I'll have the porterhouse, medium rare, baked potato with sour cream.
What do you recommend besides a steak?
The lamb chops are good.
Anything lighter?
In my house, there's always a Caesar salad with pizza.
Really?
Yes. Uh-huh. I always have to have a salad.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
How do you prepare the chicken?
It's a full bird, stuffed with ham, topped with gorgonzola.
You know what? I think I'll just have a salad.
Wait a minute. I am blown away by this. No salad at a pizza place is a deal breaker?
Yes.
I have to be honest. I have never had a salad with my pizza.
Thank you. Just a salad. Just a salad. Just a salad.
I have to have a salad with my pizza, or it's not complete.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call, That's All studios at The Avenue with Gabe Neitzel and Mark Chamora. Here's Jen Lattis.
Normally on Tuesdays, on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, it's a Tuesday. Today, a Tuesday. No Gabe Neitzel, he's on vacation. Jen Latta woke up a little bit under the weather. She's got ESPN Milwaukee Director of Content, Brian D. here, along with the big fella. This is going to be a two-hour snapshot inside the mind of Mark Chamora, which is a dangerous thing.
So we're in a bullpen?
We're deep in the bullpen.
What's past the bullpen would be?
Triple A.
Yeah,
Triple
I mean, if I'm here, Brian's here. I mean, it's...
Ashy's back.
Whew. What time do you guys normally wake up? In your new roles?
So that's an interesting question.
Now, I will just say this, Brian, before you even get to it. You sleep later than Ashton.
Now I do.
I don't know about that.
Do you know what I did for the first 10 years of my career?
Did the Red Eye show.
First 3 years, I was producing Mike and Mike. So I was getting up at 3:30. Then I had a little, breather. And then, the next four or five, I was doing Wisconsin's Morning News on WTMJ, waking up at 3. So I feel as though I've earned a little sleep in time, but I've also ruined my ability to sleep, too. So I'm up at 5:30 every day working.
See, that's the only thing I complain about doing this show.
Yeah.
I bitch a lot at home.
No.
At home.
You do?
I'm like, you don't know what it's like to get up that early. But one day when I retire... I'm still waking up at 5 in the morning.
100%.
Still waking up
you
at 5.
You can't shake it.
No.
It's coming from somebody that's done the 3 a.m. wake-up call for a decade. I'm up at 5:30 every single day.
Yeah, it really doesn't bother me.
It's actually not bad. It's kind of peaceful. You get here to the studio before anybody else is kind of here to bother you.
But the problem is this, Brian. I get it on the front end, complaining about waking up early. I get flack. From the missus.
Sure.
And then I also get flack from her for going to bed at 8 o'clock.
I think, that's the double-edged sword of working early in the morning. But I think that's anything, right? Like, if you worked late, you would get the double-edged sword. I think that's just all
You're
of our
right.
relationships. You
but
know what I mean? That's how it works.
The biggest thing is people think it's a fake job.
Well, we do have a fake job. We get to play in the sandbox of life.
Yeah. What do you say to people who say, Chewy, you have a fake job? What's your response?
I say you're right.
Oh, all right. Well, that's it.
Chewy was right. Holy.
No problem.
Chewy
with it.
Was
yes,
right.
It's a fake job. Great.
So, speaking of fake jobs, I've got one. You've got one. Ashton's got one, too. Ashton Rotman, former producer of Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, now ascending to the executive producer title here at ESPN Milwaukee. Ashton just put in a sick day for the first time ever yesterday.
I heard.
I've known Ashton for 7 years. I've never seen dude put in a sick day. So this got interesting around the office yesterday because on Friday, Ashy was chirping a little bit about the big weekend plans that he had.
I was. Yeah, that's true.
So Friday night, you were doing the Rotz Hots thing at a wedding.
Yep, Friday night.
Saturday, you were doing Rotz Hots at IPA Fest.
Yep, big weekend.
And then Sunday you were saying I got a boat day.
Boat day with my fiance's friends, which can only mean one thing, and that's I believe the exact question I asked you and Gabe Neitzel, who is not here this morning, is how many carblesses should I be consuming throughout the day? Now, sure. These are people that I like. I like my fiance's friends a lot. They're just not, you know. You know what I mean?
Hold on. Was this on a Sunday?
Yes.
Yeah, that was first mistake number one.
No. Because I'm proud of you, number one, because so many people waste Sundays.
Yes.
It's like a throwaway day. It's like I have to get ready for miserable Monday.
I'm so bad at Sundays now, Chew, that I've dubbed Thursday my favorite day of the week.
Yes.
Because you haven't screwed up your weekend yet.
Yes.
Like the whole savanna of the weekend still lies in front of you on a Thursday. I love Thursdays because I screw up Sundays so bad. So you're right. To Ashton's credit, he had himself a little Sunday fun day. But as his manager, and this is where the managerial waters of friendship and managing somebody get muddled like the bottom of an old fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ashy, I get a text from at like 5:30 on Sunday night saying, "Yo, gonna need to take a sick day tomorrow." I think you said the boat sickness got the best of me.
Now, I believe my fiance typed that out. I think I just said to her, "I need you to text Brian D." I think I'm in a passenger seat. I had just gotten done expelling while in the boat, and I'm going to defend
myself. You threw
myself.
Up?
Expelling.
Yeah, a couple of times. Now, that's bad thing number one is I did throw up in the water, which you're not supposed to do, it sounds like.
Why?
What body of water were you on?
Fox Lake.
Okay.
Hold on. Why aren't you supposed to? It feeds the fish.
Yeah, but there's people in the water. Like, I wasn't near anybody, I don't think, when it happened. Here's what I remember.
Like,
I
was having, Ashton.
Yeah, I'm listening.
I've done other things in the water that are 10 times worse.
I bet you have.
I would argue, Chew, that is a necessity when you're on a boat for 8 hours, right?
Yeah.
You're not pulling the pond.
That's why you never eat carp.
Oh, is that it?
Well, because carp will eat that stuff. I'm telling you, never eat carp.
No, I think there's a pragmatic reason for having to kind of do your business in the water. I got to imagine folks around the state of Wisconsin are doing that on a day-to-day basis when they hop off the boat and just say, oh.
Brian, I'm not talking front door. I'm talking back door.
I gathered as much.
Okay.
I was talking front door.
Oh. All right, now you may continue.
Thank you, Chewy. So I had thrown up a couple of times. I was in the water fine. And here's where I'm going to defend myself. I did not go past the amount of alcohol drinking that I thought would have made this happen. I am a nauseous person most of the time. I am a control freak. If I'm not driving, I'm getting car sick. That's just a fact of life. Now, did I have maybe one too many carbless at the time in the sun? I'd say that's probably accurate.
Hold on. Don't go there. Don't blame it on the water in the sun, please.
I didn't.
For someone that does this.
I'm just saying. I had probably one too many, but the sun got to me. The water and the waves got to me. The minute I got on the boat, everything was moving in my brain. I had to keep my eyes closed the whole time. I feel like we all know what it's like to have one too many carblesses and to be at a wedding or do something, but you add the boat and it just makes everything 100 times worse. I mean, I need a Dramamine.
So I think this guy is totally full of it. Right?
I don't know how I'm full. This is all fact.
This sick day was a farce. And again,
well,
you're allowed to use your sick days. That's fine. But this sick day was a farce. Put it up on the Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll.
Yeah.
800-990-3776, by the way, is the way for you to get into the show via phone or text.
Was this
a farce?
He's kind of owning it, but he's really not.
He's not at all.
Well, because I don't want to be the person that calls in sick because he had one too many bevvies. I've never once wanted to be that person. I think every one of us has come to work allegedly probably after a Sunday fun day or a Thursday. Like, where you're here and you're like, I need an hour.
So here's the part that bothered me the most is he texted me at 5 o'clock on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
Bad.
You've got a good regroup window there.
No, it was bad.
We've all had our Sunday fun days where by 5 o'clock we realize we've overdone it a little bit and we need to crank down the gears and say, all right, we're gonna slide into second base and call it a double for the weekend and regroup, right?
But you should have heard him earlier, Brian D. He's like, oh, I had a fever and it was so weird. Because I thought I had a fever, but I was actually 95 degrees.
Yeah, it was below.
You were cool.
Yes. I'm telling you, there was something that happened.
My advice would have been, you know, get back to home base, pound a couple of cool blue Gatorades, get into bed by 7:30, and you're back and ready to roll at 9 a.m. the next morning.
All right, let me ask you this as the boss of technically both of us. Is self-inflicted wound, is that considered a sick day?
This is the difficult part, is if somebody submits a sick day, who am I to judge if they're sick or not, right? Unless it's live on the radio.
I mean,
right,
I was going to be upfront with you no matter what about what happened.
I feel as though people are good, right? You're not going to try and pull a fast one. Ashy, in my opinion, has earned the right. I don't know. I don't know what to do about this one. I really don't know what to do about this one.
See, you cannot. Well, it depends on the person. Because I have never taken a sick day in my playing days. What and I've had the, fevers.
What was the sickest you were before a game that you played in the NFL or in college?
College. I had a temperature of 101.
Damn.
And we were playing Temple in that crap hole Veterans Stadium where Philly in used Philly, to play.
On the concrete with like the green carpet on top of it.
And the coach made me play.
Why? Well, I guess it was a different time.
Because
we
sucked. I was the only one that was kind of good.
You needed to take out Temple that bad?
Yeah.
So yeah. That was your Jordan flu.
And I remember this, Brian, because being sick like that is probably the equivalent of being a little drunk.
Sure. Yep.
And I was running down the middle of the field. I mean, not delusional, but you're definitely mind's not right with 101 temp.
I mean, to be fair, you're still kind of running down the middle of the field delusional in 2024 here.
Yeah. And that's a good one. And I'm running down the middle of the field. I'm clearing out, and I just turned my head.
Can you define clearing out quickly?
Clearing out just down the middle. Cover two.
Okay.
Tight end has to take the middle of the field to hold the safety.
There's just been a lot of backdoor
ball was
talk.
In the air, Brian. And it was probably one of the most amazing catches I ever made. So the ball was in the air. I turned so late. And you'll be able to see it on the YouTube. But I turned my head, literally, like, as the ball was going by my head, and stuck my right arm up without even looking at the ball and caught it.
You Odell'd it. You just, it's, yeah. you know, there can only be one Highlander.
And the coach yelled at me.
Because you caught it with one hand?
No, because I didn't get my head around quick enough.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, I'm sick.
Do you think Boston College versus Temple from the 80s is on YouTube? Do you think that's how YouTube works?
You know what? We should have people guess the attendance of that game.
Seven.
Okay. All right. We are going to do a little digging in the break here. Jason Wilde, our Packers reporter, is going to join us on the other side, and we're going to get you the attendance of Boston College versus Temple Chewy's
1988, I believe it
88,
is.
88 Chewy's Jordan flu game. You can also take the poll on Twitter at Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Judge Ashton's sick day for us. He had himself a little boat day on Sunday, and then he called in sick. Should we let this fly? 800-990-3776. Is the phone number to get in. Jason Wilde next on a Tuesday on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Ready, down, put.
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
A Tuesday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. No Gabe Neitzel, no Jen Ladd. I'm Mark Chmura, Ashton Rotman, Brian Z with you from 7 to 9 here on ESPN Milwaukee. Chewy's flu game. 1988 Boston College Eagles, November 26th, Chew. No. Veterans Stadium, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
I must have had some bad turkey. That's right after Thanksgiving, right? Does it have my stats?
I haven't found your stats yet.
Okay.
You guys lost 45-28.
That's embarrassing.
To Temple.
Yes. That is terrible.
And you wanted to guess the attendance of this game. We should do this Price is Right style. I want you to Price is Right the attendance at Boston College Temple at Veterans Stadium, which, by the way, not a small stadium.
No.
Like, that was an NFL
old school
stadium back in the day. I want you to give me a Price is Right guess.
Well, I know what it is, kind of. I know how to ballpark it.
Okay, ballpark it for me. Like, walk through the process of the attendance at this at your flu game.
Temple doesn't really travel well, even to their home stadium.
I was going to say, they're at home. They
to their home to stadium. Well. BC was not, even though 88, we were probably preseason ranked. The year before we were like, because we were still riding high from the Flutie years.
Okay. You guys were 3-8 that year, 1-5 in conference play.
Yeah, that's
really
good.
So,
yeah, we were not ranked at that time.
No.
I think it was the last game of the year.
It was the last game of the year. Weather was probably lovely in Philadelphia in late November.
I don't want to go double digits, I think. I'd say 9,500 people.
Official attendance for this game, 12,892.
Oh, it's better than I thought. In an 80,000-seat stadium.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nearly 13,000 people saw you make a one-handed catch with 103-degree temperature.
It's weird when you're on the bench and you can actually hear people's conversations in the stands.
Yes.
Because it kind of echoes.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's shift gears and talk about the family night where 70,000 people were on Saturday evening with Jason Wilde. Good morning, Jason. So yesterday, we had the opportunity on our station to speak with the little kid that was able to catch those three punts at family night, Trace Ramirez from Waupun. What was that moment like when you were at the stadium? I can't imagine it was anything less than electric for the 11-year-old superstar of family night.
Yeah, best thing is that he actually caught the balls, right? Like, it's a cute little thing that they would have during breaks in the practice. Kids from, I don't know how they chose Waupun, but awesome that they did, from a youth football team, do some different skills. They had some kids kick field goals, but it's not the, to use your word, electric atmosphere if he just doesn't catch any balls. Chewy remembers they used to do the crunch time catch before games, and it was it was sponsored by a pickle company, and they would take a fan out of the stands, put a helmet on him, Packers helmet, and then basically it was an opportunity to watch somebody look like a fool, because trying to catch a ball from the jugs machine wearing a bulky Packers helmet from an NFL player, the success rate was very low. So, you know, I don't know what people expected, but obviously Trace more than outkicked, if you will, the expectations. And for me anyway, it was great that he caught the balls, but it was the way the players reacted to that. That was the best part. The fact that he was mobbed by the entire team. They were jumping around him. I mean, he did a little interview on the sideline on the Packers live stream of it. And it was, not only was it the best moment of family night on Saturday night, I think it probably was the best moment of any family night ever. Like, we've had rain delays. We've had Brett Favre show up. That was quite a moment. When he was no longer going to be the quarterback. We had Kevin Kaseviharn pick off Brett Favre and return it for a touchdown to help his chances of making it in the NFL. But nothing compares to Trace. I believe he has the GOAT moment of family night.
So, Jason, did you see the snap count for the receivers?
Yeah, I saw you guys talking about this, and like, they only had like 26 snaps of the number one offense, which to me is not a very productive night for the offense, which speaks to how poorly it performed against the defense. But go ahead.
Okay, so Devontae Wicks had 6 snaps.
Dontavion, sorry.
And according to our fans, 65% of them believe that he got so few snaps because they didn't want to show Philadelphia how good he is. I mean, I love our fans, but that's borderline ridiculous. Why did he get so few snaps?
I mean, because he's the fourth receiver right now, you know? And I would say that even though we spend so much time talking about how they don't have a number one and so much time talking about how good all these young guys are, there's still a pecking order, right? And Romeo Doubs has had a fantastic camp. I mean, really, really good. They've got Christian Watson healthy and practicing, Although when he got hung out to dry on that deep ball down the seam, I thought maybe that would be the end of that. When he collided with Evan Williams late in the practice, but he needs work, right? I mean, first of all, he's a field tilting player with his ability to take the top off the defense if he's healthy. So those two are pretty clear cut getting more snaps. And then Jaden Reed led you in receiving yards last year, and some people think he could be a 100-catch player. So that leaves Wicks at four. Now, I don't think he's the number four like, say, you know, Terry Mickens or Bill Schrader were during your time as a player, and there was a wide discrepancy between number one and number four. But I do think he's number four, but I think he would have had a lot more snaps had they been more productive offensively. I mean, I'm telling you, the defense has basically owned them for almost every practice. And there are glimpses of, you know, Love hitting Watson for a deep ball touchdown. And obviously we've talked about Romeo, but the by a wide margin, the snaps tend to go to the defense right now. And I'm not saying that it's time for alarm bells to go off. I'm also not saying that this defense is going to be like the 85 Bears. But to me, that I was saying this to Homer and Bulaga last night. To me, that's the storyline. It's just how stinking good this defense has looked and how bad it has made the offense. Look, I mean, they're 2 minute drill. They got 4 plays. Like, you know this. Like, usually coaches, like, will kind of conjure up a phantom penalty or something to keep the drive going so the offense gets more than 4 snaps in the 2 minute drill. But that's how bad the 2 minute drill was, or how good the defense was during it.
Jason, who's playing Z and who's playing X across the board? Are they all interchangeable right now?
So that is one of the things that is obviously really important about what they do, is that they're all interchangeable. Again, you know, it's crazy for me, because obviously I covered you as a player, but those are the types of questions that my brain still asks. And it's just not like, and especially with how much they use motion and shift, like it's just, it's not your grandpa's or your Chewy's offense anymore. It's just so different than Holmgren, where you knew where Robert Brooks was going to line up. You knew where Free was going to line up. You know, it's just, you know, and I'll give credit to guys like Watson. Like, Watson would have been a very clear peg in one spot in that era, and he's able to move around, and he doesn't look like the kind of guy that you would necessarily move around. But again, I just think that, you know, it's, and I remember Antonio Chapman was once their number four receiver. This is just so different in terms of, A, how different guys can play different spots, and B, how close they all are in relation to each other.
Jason Wilde with us here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, 94.5 ESPN. Jason, it feels like the 49ers are on the precipice of a Brandon Ayuk trade, potentially to the AFC. How do you think that would change the power dynamic atop the NFC? Because it feels like, and we've seen in Green Bay, losing one player of that caliber on your offense can kind of change the entire football team. I also think it's indicative in some way of the situation the Packers are going to find themselves in 2 or 3 years down the line when they have to pay 2 or 3 of these guys, right? You can't hold on to your star players forever.
Yeah, especially not if you're not willing to pay them, and the Packers will have to decide who is and is not someone that they're willing to pay. Because these guys, obviously, the 49ers did pay Deebo Samuel a while back. I don't know, like, Deebo Samuel seems to me like he's dealt with a lot of injuries of late, right? I'm not imagining that. And Ayuk, remember, Ayuk is still a young player. Like, this is going to be, whoever gets him, if this trade does indeed happen, they're obviously going to have to pay him. But he was picked one pick above Jordan Love in 2020. Like, this is a guy that's still ascending and is a guy that I know the Packers really like. Someday I'm going to get Brian Gutekunst to have one too many Coors Lights and admit or clarify whether or not they would have taken Ayuk at 26 had the 49ers not moved in front of them, because multiple people have said back then that they were going to take Ayuk, and then when they didn't, that's when they took Love. So, you know, we'll talk about unanswered prayers that Garth Brooks used to sing about. Like, if that is actually true, and I don't know if it is, then they don't have Jordan Love right now, and it makes you wonder what the world would be like for them. But yeah, if he, like, if they trade him to the AFC, that's obviously a huge thing for everybody in the NFC. But the 49ers still have a lot of really good football players. Whether or not they're able to find some, like, their first round pick or some of those other guys to step into that breach, they don't have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback who can make chicken salad out of you know what. I think their quarterback still has a long way to go before we know that he's good enough to do that.
Jason, I saw they activated Tucker Kraft from the PUP list. Why is Musgrave so quiet this year as compared to last?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have the answer to that. I kind of feel like the tight ends as a whole, obviously Kraft hasn't been practicing, but, like, you know, it's kind of a nondescript group after Luke and after Tucker. And so it feels to me like, in at least on 11-on-11, I just don't see a lot of balls getting thrown to any tight ends. You know, they've had Tyler Davis working with the ones a lot, with Tucker not practicing. And you know, he's going to do some drill work, but he's probably another couple weeks away from doing 11-on-11, just like Zach Tom was the first 2 weeks. He was able to practice but not do team, and he's going to do team today, we expect. So I don't know. I think, you know, Tom Silverstein asked a question about Musgrave after family night, and I think I and others have been wondering, because there was so much buzz about him last year. So there's such a stark difference between what we were talking, like, we were raving about him this time last year, and now this year, you know, and maybe he's just like, you know, maybe he's reached that point that you did where, you know, you didn't have to have a strong camp. You just sort of put in your work, and then, you know, once the season starts, then we see how vital of a piece of the offense you are.
Last thing for you, Jason. Packers-Browns first preseason game on Saturday afternoon at 3:25 in Cleveland. It's so hard to infer anything from these games because it feels like they do keep these intentionally vanilla in some ways. But what are you going to be watching? Who's got the most to gain in preseason game number one from a Packers perspective?
Well, apparently I'll be watching Dontavian Wicks' snap count, for one, because I didn't watch it closely enough on Family Night.
They're hiding them.
But that's my understanding. But look, let's be realistic here. Their offensive line has not been very good. I don't think that they will play Tom, but if they don't, then I don't think they'll play Love. So it'll be interesting to see who they trot out there for their offensive line, because the Packers defense and their front have had too much success and blown up too many plays with pressure. Obviously, you can't hit the quarterback, but you can certainly make him uncomfortable and make him escape the pocket, and that's what they've done to Love in a lot of practices. So the offensive line, for sure. To your point, Brian, I don't know how many, like, lasting judgments we can make about the defense based on what they do against the Browns on Saturday afternoon, but the fact of the matter is, this is what we're waiting for, right? I mean, just like Family Night was kind of the soft launch of this defense. Again, I have been really impressed from front to back, and it is definitely a huge departure from what they had been running. Whether or not that is effective in the regular season, we'll have to wait and see. And then I want to see how many kicks they get their two kickers, right? Because if you've got 4th and 1 at the 40, are you kicking a 58-yarder, or are you going for it and keeping the drive going so you can get your guys more snaps on offense? I'm not sure, but I don't get the sense that they feel all that great about either one of those kickers. And, you know, Rob Domofsky reported that they brought in another guy for a tryout. They didn't sign him at this point, but they've still got a lot of things to figure out as the preseason kicks off.
Jason, real quick, maybe I just glanced over this in my own brain because there's been so much going on with the Packers this preseason. Is the expectation Jordan Love's going to play at all this preseason, or are they going to stash him away now that he's the highest paid player in NFL history?
Yeah, really good question, because we've been trying to ask it too. I think the way LaFleur answered it, he said that the coaches have talked, and they believe everyone should play, and here comes the key phrase, at some point.
Huh.
That leaves the door open for Love to play, let's say, play against the Ravens in the final preseason game at Lambeau. I don't know what the plan is, but clearly they did play. They obviously had to play him last year, and I would still argue that he will benefit from some snaps. But you're right. The risk is obviously this is what we worry about, and I am of the Ted Thompson school. I'd rather bubble wrap guys, but I still get a kick out of the fact I was talking about this with Bulaga yesterday because he was in this game. They played in Winnipeg a few years ago, mm-hmm. and the field was just trash. And they held out 33 guys from the game, including Rodgers and Aaron Jones, et cetera. But they basically, you know, the other 60 guys, the message was, well, we don't care if you guys get hurt, so go on out there. So, I, you know, and they kind of did that with Family Night with the one live period that they did. I even asked LaFleur, you know, how did you decide? Well, those were guys we needed to take a longer look at. Yeah, no, those were guys that if they tore an MCL, you're like, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry about that, but you're not the most important guy on our team. So I think it's going to be a lot of, and he kind of hinted at it too, it's going to be a lot of those same guys that were taking part in the live period on Saturday that are going to be playing this Saturday.
Well, to be fair, Jason, there was a hole in the middle of the end zone in that game in Winnipeg from the CFL goalpost. So that made things a little more difficult.
But those other guys still had a play on it.
That's true. Don't worry about those ankles when you fall into that 3-foot hole in the middle of the end zone.
I was there.
Some would argue you still are. Yeah. Jason, thanks so much. We'll listen for you an hour and a half on Wilde and Talish. Appreciate you.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
That is Jason Wilde. Read his stuff, Wisconsin State Journal. And, of course, listen to Wilde and Talish weekdays 9 to noon here on 94.5 ESPN. Guys, that's interesting. I feel like we just glanced over it, that we just assumed Jordan Love wasn't going to play. It scares the living bejesus out of me that he might. We'll dive further into that next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Not only a huge day, but a Tuesday here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. No Gabe, no Jen. Brian D. Ashton Rotman and the big fella with you until 9 a.m. Chew, did we just unearth the biggest under-talked-about story of the preseason with Jason Wilde a couple of minutes ago on ESPN Milwaukee?
Probably.
I think
Jason's appearance is a little depressing.
Why was it depressing?
Offensive line playing like crap.
Yeah.
Kickers.
I mean, these aren't things we didn't know, you know? The offensive line, I feel like, has been under-talked about, too. And that's problematic when you've got the highest-paid quarterback in the history of the league standing behind him trying to develop after 10 good games of NFL play.
And then Luke Musgrave.
Yeah.
That wasn't glowing.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the tight ends a little bit later this morning here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. But I want to dust this off. Ashy, let's play this audio from Jason Wilde just moments ago here on ESPN Milwaukee. Will and should Jordan Love play this preseason?
I think the way LaFleur answered it, he said that the coaches have talked and they believe everyone should play, and here comes the key phrase, at some point.
Huh.
That leaves the door open for Love to play, let's say, play against the Ravens in the final preseason game at Lambeau. I don't know what the plan is, but clearly they did play. They obviously had to play him last year, and I would still argue that he will benefit from some snaps. But you're right. The risk is obviously this is what we worry about, and I am of the Ted Thompson school. I'd rather bubble wrap guys.
So, Chu, I was under the assumption, and this is on me, but I feel like a lot of fans are probably the same way, they were just going to stash him away, right? You pay this guy a gigantic contract. You want him healthy for week one in a weird place in Brazil on what's probably going to be a slick track and long travel and all the variables for that week one game. I think I just assumed he wasn't going to play in the preseason, and I think that's the right way to go about it. I don't think he should play in the preseason, but it kind of sounds like the Packers are thinking about throwing him at some point.
Well, if I'm going to play him, I'm playing him against Denver because the Browns were the number one defense.
Yeah.
And their backups are still pretty solid, I would assume, if they have the number one defense. The Ravens, who have always been known for defense, finished sixth.
Yeah.
And the Broncos finished 29th.
So I'm not looking at, defenses as much, because like we talked about with Jason, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I feel like in the preseason, everything is super vanilla. Like, they're not trying to disguise things on the back end and fool you in the preseason. I think they are just trying to get through unscathed too. I think I want them against Baltimore just because it's closest to the regular season and it's at home.
Right? Yeah.
You've got control over most of the variables that would skeeve you about playing the highest paid quarterback in NFL history.
Well, number one, I'm not playing him unless Zach Tom is out there.
There's things
you can do to protect yourself, because you want to get him in a rhythm, in stride. You don't want him running, and there's things you can do to protect him. You know, it's very simple. Run three-step drops, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all timing. I know personally, I needed to play in the preseason just because the speed, even though it's a preseason game, is faster than practice. You know, it ramps up where now the regular season obviously is going to be faster than the preseason. So there needs to be a ramp up. Look, Jordan Love is not Aaron Rodgers. He's not. So I agreed with LaFleur not playing Aaron for all those years. But I still think Jordan, there's some development that needs to be made. He finished the season very strong, but there's still some things that he needs to work on, and no better place to do it other than a preseason game. He'll be fine. He's a smart kid. He's not going to run the ball. He's not going to hold on to the ball, get rid of the thing. But he does need to work on a little bit of timing, because to me, listening to Jason, it sounds like the offense is a little bit behind right now.
Oh, for sure. Did you want to get hit in the preseason?
I didn't want to get hit hard.
I don't think anybody wants to get hit, but like, did you, I ask it in the context of, did you need that to feel like you were ready for the regular season?
A little bit.
Woo, got one to the head a little bit, or the shoulder. I feel like I'm ready to play football.
I mean, you don't really need some big shots, but, you know, securing the ball is, you know, you're not going to get it in practice, right? You're not going to get gang tackled. So, yes, from that standpoint, for ball security, and I would think it'd be the same for a running back, you want to get used to that. Everything has to do with timing, Brian. You know what I mean? Timing from the standpoint, okay, I'm out in the open a little bit. I got defenders, you know, closing in on me. Okay, I need to secure the ball. Because sometimes, I'm not going to lie, sometimes you forget about the ball. You forget you even have the ball. You know, so it's kind of a weird feeling. So from that standpoint, yes, I don't want to get lit up by a safety, but I want to be tackled by two or three guys.
Feel a little contact for sure.
Yeah. Sure.
800-990-3776 is the phone number for you to get in. I'm scared bleepless about playing Jordan Love in the preseason at all. Because
shouldn't everybody, though? Shouldn't everybody be feeling the same? I'm with you, Brian. I think this is nuts. I think it's the fact that it's even a conversation. I'm like, I thought we were past this.
Why?
I thought the minute that he signed, it was great. We'll see a bunch of him in practice. We'll see him doing warm-ups. We'll see you in Brazil. It's going to be a weird game anyways, no matter what. And we'll see. By week three, everything's going to be fine. Like, that's my mindset was completely on, if they start 1-2 or 2-1 and he feels better, I'm cool with that.
You don't have time to treat the regular season like a preseason.
Ah, but
you just don't.
What about when they go down to like only two preseason games then, and when there's eventually an 18-game regular season? Aren't those first two games then just going to be preseason games almost? Yeah, every game counts. Like, don't get me wrong, I understand that, but
I mean, you don't have to hit Philadelphia in stride, but I mean, you don't want to be going four and outs. And we all know, and I talk about it all the time, this season for home field advantage in a bye is going to come down to one game. Right, so you don't have time, because I was looking at their schedule, and their schedule is a lot tougher than last year. There's a lot of games where I'm not saying they're going to win, but they have the potential to lose.
Yeah, well, the way I look at their schedule, Chu, is it's backloaded in terms of strength, which would underscore what you're saying, that they need to get off to a hot start in what is perceived as the softer portion of their schedule, yeah. right? The Indies of the world, the Titans of the world, the Vikings of the world, the Cardinals. You get all those teams before the first week of October, yes. right? The flip side of that coin is, I agree with you, it's going to come down to one game at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I need Jordan Love to be in that freaking game.
I agree, but I would have felt much more comfortable if they flipped the Eagles-Colts with the Titans-Vikings. And I would agree with you from that standpoint. They're going to beat the Titans, and they're going to beat the Vikings, right?
You would think
so. If that was the first two games, I'd be like, do you really need to play them in the preseason? Maybe not. Maybe a little. Maybe a couple series. But when you go Eagles-Colts, and don't sleep on the Colts, do not.
If Richardson's good,
they can beat Green Bay. That's the only thing I'm talking about. If that was flipped, then I'd be like, all right, you don't really need to play. I mean, you can treat the Titans like a preseason game, and you can treat the Vikings like a preseason game. Can't do that with the Eagles.
No.
If you're not zooming, playing Eagles, you're going to lose, and you may lose bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not going to be a good look, even with all the variables of that game, of the travel and the weird turf and the mm-hmm. Brazil and all the stuff that comes along with starting your season on a Friday night. We want to hear from you on this. 800-990-3776. Jason Wilde just spoke with us a couple of minutes ago and sounded like to me, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, that the plan at some point, and those are the key words from Matt LaFleur, at some point is to potentially play Jordan Love during the preseason. That scares me. I think it should scare you, but I don't want to speak for you. 800-990-3776. Should Jordan Love play at all in this preseason? You next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I'm telling you, don't doubt his story, because he heebie-jeebies at certain times to miss field goals.
Yeah.
Gabe, I showed you how he does the heebie-jeebies,
heebie-jeebie.
You take your fingers and you rub them back and forth on your thigh, and you go heebie-jeebie, heebie-jeebie. Swear the guy bats 100%. So to call him a liar, and he puts a curse on you?
Look, stupid. I'm not calling him a liar.
Yeah, you are.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Jeff Ed texts into the show, 800-990-3776 on this Tuesday and this huge day on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Wow, this is a real treat for me. Two of my favorites together on the air, Scalzo and Ashy.
Swing and a miss.
I think I know that what that's in reference to, which we can get into an hour or two, actually.
Does he think I'm Scalz?
Yesterday, Chewy didn't know who Matt Hamilton was by his voice and thought he was Scalzo.
I did.
And I'm still not sure if you know who Matt Hamilton is, so we might have to dive deeper into that.
So it was a shot at me.
I think so.
Which is fair. That's fine. Chef Ed, deserve it.
Chef Ed, as we say, he gets the show. He gets the station, quite honestly. So it might be a shot at you.
Do you know Matt Hamilton's like claim to fame, like his biggest accomplishment in life?
All right. And can I ask one question?
Sure.
Does he work for National or for our station?
Us.
Matt Hamilton.
Madison. He works for ESPN Madison.
He works for ESPN Wisconsin. Madison. Okay. He does a wildly popular afternoon show, Jim, Matt, and Molly.
Is that the curling guy?
Chewy was right. Holy Chewy was right.
He's pretty good. At what? What is he good at?
Curling and
all right,
being a host of a show. He's pretty good.
What did he win in curling? Do you have any idea?
Well, metal probably, right?
Color that metal was? What metal that metal was made out of?
I mean, I'll start with gold and work my way back.
You nailed it.
You won gold?
What competition?
Curling.
No. At Worlds, perhaps? Or is there something higher?
I thought it was the Olympics.
Yeah, you nailed it.
I'm
the big fella's killing it.
If
this
we
morning.
Showed you a picture of Matt, would you know it
well,
was him?
Well, I'm picturing, because wasn't he kind of a Chris Farley type?
You know, I could, well, I'm not going to say that because it's gonna crop its head up on Jim, Matt, and Molly this afternoon. I could see how you would make that connection from the head.
Yes.
He's not as big as Chris
Farley
was. See,
here's the problem. If you put Scalzo's voice and his close together, they'd be hard to differentiate the two.
Scalzo and Matt?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I'm going to try and do that for you, but I can't think of two people that sound less similar.
You're a
honestly.
Liar.
Okay. So on the other side, we're going to be back in 2 minutes here. We're going to have Scalzo Scalzo's voice versus Matt Hamilton's voice. And also, Chewy's got a fascinating take about the New York football Jets.
I'm going to say one thing, though. As of late, the fans have been against me. No, they have been. I haven't won a poll in I don't know how long.
Since I left, probably. You're welcome.
Well, it's been before that.
We're going to get Chewy a poll win by the end of the show. Hey, we'll be back in 2 minutes on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.